I tell you. I don't know why I just don't do it now, but I just feel like just throwing everything away and just saying, come on in. And just staying in this, I just feel so blessed. I just feel God's presence. Hallelujah. If I thought you all would and could, I would just do that. I've got a long ways to travel this morning and what I need to bring. And that's the only reason I'm cutting it off in such a timely manner. I feel the Lord is really doing something. I feel there's something being done in hearts that cannot be seen and measured by the outside. Now, you know, in some people, maybe it's not being done. I realize that. But I want you to know that who it's not being done in, and in others, it is being done in. There are some things that are deep, that are building and deepening. There are people making decisions that we've never made before in all of our lives. And it isn't all manifest. There's some outside truth. A lot of people aren't even saying a whole lot, excepting maybe in the intimate prayer meetings. But things inside are building and deepening. And they're making decisions. And they're laying foundations. And they're letting God plow up their heart. And they're really coming to the cross. In no way am I trying to say we've apprehended. But I'm wanting to say that we're getting on the road. And we're beginning to do what many have wanted to do for so long and have failed to do for so long. But finally, the Holy Spirit is moving in such a way inside of them that they have divine enablement to do what it seems like they could not do. And what's happening is, you see, they are waiting on God. And they're praying and deciding to believe. And deciding to pay the price. Deciding to step out. Deciding to do what they couldn't do. Deciding to just trust the Lord for it. Deciding to accept His grace and quit wallowing around in self-condemnation or self-pity. But to step out and trust God. And you know, those that are doing it are finding that God is faithful. He's backing up His promise. He's backing up the decisions. And they're finding themselves being changed. People are finding chains falling off. People who have been bound are finding themselves free. They're finding a worship and a praise and adoration and a love before, well, they couldn't really seem to get a hold of it in that measure. And I just want to challenge you. And not only challenge you, but encourage you to continue. I need my Bible, honey. I don't have my sermon. I got my sermon, but not my Sunday school lesson. I'll be preaching this morning on Come Take Up Thy Cross.
Thank you.
Now, the Sunday school message, Paul said one time, in a letter to the Church of Corinth, he said, you know, I really had a desire in my heart to really bring you some real meat. I wanted to bring you certain, but he said, I found that you weren't able in the state that you were in, and I had to bring you things I would rather not bring you. I had the baby bottle feed you, so to speak. I had to bring you milk when I'd rather have you give you meat. And sometimes pastors are faced with giving people what they need rather than what he wants to bring them. And would rather than what they should be able to take. And sometimes people who can take meat have to have some milk because that's what others need. And sometimes others, you know, who can only take milk have to gum a lot of fat steaks that they can't fully take care of because others need also that. And in a congregation like this, so we find milk drinkers gumming steaks and we find steak eaters drinking milk. But sometimes that must be so. So if you'll be patient with one another until we all get meat eaters, we'd appreciate it. Which brings me to my Sunday school lesson. I do not want to bring this message because I'd rather be bringing something just a lot more spiritual, edifying, revelatory, et cetera, et cetera. And I would like you that don't need this message to just be patient with the others and with myself this morning and just take it. And we'll talk to you about the cross later. that others might not even be able to make a decision on yet. This is a message born of necessity, unfortunately, and I realize it doesn't affect a lot of you, but I have no way of knowing how many affects or who it affects, nor can I plan on having them all come to an evening seminar and know that they'll get there. Therefore, I must bring it in Sunday school time. Now, I must hurry. I want to talk first of, this is Back into Balance is the title. I have a number of things. Most of it time will be taken with the first one. I need again to remind you of things that I said before that had you paid strict attention, I would not have had to bring it again this time. Please make this the last time I have to bring this. I want to talk about demonic symbols or demonic homing devices or those things that would bring, allow possibly spirits to come in. And the opening statement is that some have gone overboard and have violated the pastor's ruling. The pastor has said he has laid you a foundation. He has told you what things are suspect. He's given some examples. He's told you to be careful. He said to rid your house of these things. He said that demons are not in everything. He said don't go out and decide for yourself all kinds of things beyond what I have laid and come in and build on another man's foundation and begin to teach this congregation contrary to what I have taught them. Don't come in and do what I have not done. Don't say, well, the pastor didn't go far enough. I'm going to go further. You know, if you want to go out and build your own church, teach your own doctrine, you can do that. But in this church, don't take advantage of this crowd to preach your doctrine different than mine. And some of you with good hearts, but a little bit having a soggy spot uphill, and the memory cells have not been able to be activated properly, have violated the pastor's ruling. Now, the Apostle Paul said, I know that an idol is nothing. Now, my question to you is, do you know it? Now, a lot of you don't know it. You don't know it. Now, I did not say a demon is nothing. I said an idol is nothing. Even though a demon may come into an idol, the idol is nothing. Now, I have another question. I have a number of questions to ask you. Would you eat a roast from a heathen temple? Would you eat meat that was offered to a god at a heathen temple? If it were brought into and sold on here at Pike's Peak Market or on Safeway, would you say, oh, I can't take that one. That's been offered in a heathen temple. Now, what do you ask yourself? Do you disagree with the Bible? Now, ask yourself, in this regard, ask yourself that question. Are you more correct than Paul? Do you have more revelation than him? Would you need to correct Paul? Would you need to say to people, well, you know, you know, I've been doing some study on this, and you just can't really go by what Paul says. Are you more correct than your pastor? Paul said, wouldn't bother me a bit.
Right.
Hasn't hurt the meat a bit.
Right.
No demons going to get into me from this meat eating he's an altar. See, he hobnobbed all around. He walked all around the idols. They were everywhere.
Right.
Everywhere in Greece and Rome.
Right.
They were everywhere in America, too.
Yeah.
Not to the same extent in the same outward way, but they're everywhere in America. You cannot get away from demonic symbols no matter where you go. The ETs and the unicorns and all the elves and all the rest are all everywhere you're going. The tiki gods and everything else. But so did Paul. And he didn't allow those demons to enter him. Just because they were around didn't mean that he was affected by them. Now, would you build on another man's foundation something that he doesn't want? Would you do that? Paul said he wouldn't. Paul said, I would not build on another man's foundation. Does God give you the authority to overrule the pastor? He asked yourself that question. I'm trying to help some of you that want to have the propensity to rush beyond the pastor and then get some groups together and tell them these things because you're just not thinking. You're not thinking. What are you to do with revelation or research contrary to what the pastor allows? What are you to do with that? Do you have the right to lay another man's foundation? Build blocks and things on his foundation, something he doesn't want. Can you go over to, you see a lot being built up, and you go over and start building on that foundation of another man, some house that he doesn't want? Would you do that? See, well, God told me that he wants us to sell our chairs and our sofas and sit on the floor and show our Christ-like humility. Now, supposing you felt like God showed you this. And then you felt like, well, the pastor being out of tune with the more abundant spiritual life and revelations that I receive, he's a doubter, but I must obey God in my conscience, right? Wrong. You see, just because a person feels like God told me, gives him no right to bring it. A lot of people are confused. They say, well, I got you. God told me. No, no. God also told you not to prophesy beyond the proportion of the faith, meaning the word of God, not faith, but the faith, as the article. Don't prophesy beyond the proportion of the word, the truth that you know. Don't prophesy things that is not a part of the body knowledge that you get from the word of God, because the word of God has to decide doctrine, not prophesy. Don't prophesy things that you have not read in here and nobody knows doctrinally beyond the faith. I didn't say leading, I said faith, the faith. And the scripture tells us that we are to obey them to have the rule over you. And God isn't contradicting himself. Because you see, there are those who have listened, he said, try the spirits. There are those who don't try the spirits. And a person says, well, I know God showed me. We've already had people that we knew, they knew God showed them things that I wouldn't allow. One of them I stopped as he tried to run up the stairs over near the church. I stopped him, he did a yogi dance or whatever, they went on the stairway. He said, well, all I wanted to say is the river has returned. And I said, no, the river hasn't returned. I don't want you to say that to the people. Another one gave me a big, long letter. He wanted to preach, and I wouldn't let him preach. He gave it to me to read. It was the most demonic thing I ever saw in my life, fed by demonic powers. Another one came to me and said, God showed me that David wasn't going to be healed until Russ wears a beard. See, he didn't know what spirit was upon him. And after a while, he was all dressed in white. His name was Michael. And he said, I'm Michael the Archangel. The demon brought him into insanity because he wouldn't heal and bring himself under the pastor. He knew more because he was getting direct from God. Now, beware. I know you're not insane yet, but he didn't start out insane. And you think, well, I know more than the pastor. I am judge. Be careful when your mind and God are synonymous. And everything is judged by your truth. This is the truth. Walk ye in it, everybody. Right up in my brain, if you want to know anything, here is the truth. I judge all. I know all. Right, wrong. I mean, everybody, you know, no matter who it is, it all stems from right here is the judgment. Be careful of that. Be careful of I know more. I have seen young people lifted up in the snare, caught in the snare of the devil, until the demons had opportunity to fool their minds. I'm not going to let every demonic thing come out because somebody thinks it's of the Lord.
Right.
Or even that which is not demonic, but it's purely intellectual.
Right.
And so, whether even if you're right and I'm wrong, the church cannot go beyond the pastor.
Right.
You've got advanced revelation, you've got to play the pastor into it. You can't split the church and have, you know, two different congregations within.
Right.
Now, questions. Are owls and frogs demonic? Did God create demonic animals? Why is an owl demonic? Let's analyze it. Is it because it's bad attitude? Is that where the demons came in? Is his attitude because he's a killer? He kills. Talons and beaks. Is he have a worse attitude than your cat? The owl is hungry and eats because he's hungry according to the only food God gave him to eat. He didn't give him big mandibles to mash corn. He's doing what he was intended to do. Your cat can eat both and you fill his stomach full and he doesn't even need the bird out there. But you let one pass by and he's just like this immediately. He cannot rest with any other little animal going by. He can't just lay there and sleep. He has immediately come alive. Yes, some of you have cats. And cats have been part of the demonic symbols for a long time. The witches always got a black cat around. And they were in Egypt. Is an owl demonic because of he kills? How about a raccoon? He kills. He kills fish. Took them out of my pond. I didn't even know we had any raccoons in the area. Made that outside creek. I put about those fish, put in there. Next thing I knew, they were missing. When I drove my driveway, and who that raccoon was, with his, looked like the Lone Ranger, you know. And I knew what happened to my fish. Now, if an owl is demonic because he kills, how about a robin? You ever see him stretch the prey? He's trying to hold onto the ground with one end. He's stretching him, you know. And yet you're not out there rebuking all the robins. How about the sparrow? These little birds, you know, that God takes care of, the sparrow. They're not eating insects. He said, that's an insect. He's little. He said, just because you don't like him because he's ugly. Can you kill people because they're ugly? They like each other. They mate. They get along fine. They're flying along and, you know, and find themselves in the whale's belly, so to speak. And God says he takes care of the sparrow. Are they the money? What about lions? What about the Lion of England? Is it wrong for England to have a symbol, a lion? You see, lion was the symbol of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar's day, and before that. Is England involved with possibly demonic symbols? Actually, the lion went close back to Egypt. Now, does that mean that England is in, it didn't pass the lion, it goes back to the Egyptian and the Babylonian system, and it's demonic, and it's, well, how about the lion of the tribe of Judah? How about the eagle of the United States? Is it any worse than an owl? And the eagle, with his big talons and beak, is it wrong for us to have this? You know, that's for the standard of Rome. The eagle was the standard of Rome. And the Jews would allow it nowhere in their temple. Eagle is also one of the pictures that God put for the cherub, one of the cherub, face of the cherubim. God said we should mount up as wings of an eagle. And he talks about the saints as being like eagles. Is everything the devil has used as symbols of his realm devilish or demonic? Now, let me show you some of the things that the devil has used. And what if we try to avoid it all? First of all, you all know that the devil has used one of the great areas as he's played up is nighttime. The darkness. When the witches come out, you know. Well, in the nighttime. Does that mean that we have to cancel our evening services? We do not go out into the night. Because of the evilness and the demonic of the night, where demons fly through the air, and in the night the demons are there, and we need to be careful. I'm going to tell you, my friends, you can't get away from them. In bed, in church, you go on an airplane trip, and they follow you right down. They're everywhere. You're not going to escape them by looking the other way at it from an owl, or by staying out of the night. How about the full moon? You all know what happens under the full moons, and the abracadabras, and the knights, and the owls, and the broomsticks, and the whole works out there. And the full moon, we need to keep away from those full moons. Full moon, we can't go out tonight. See? The feast came on full moons. How about the stars and the planets? The demons have always, that's part of the demonic symbols, the stars and the planets, the moons and the sun. Now, you know, the whole astrology system is built on the planets. Do we then need to keep away from the planets? But even when you can't see them in the daytime, they're there. Just because you can't see them, they're there. And the stars too. And yet the Lord has used stars in his symbols. We should be like stars. You know, Evan, you use it as a type of the saints. Now, how many women in this assembly, would you raise your hand, how many of you have that wicked, dastardly, occult symbol that all witches have, the broom? You mean you haven't got that out of your house yet? I am appalled. That thing, you know, do you ever hear any clatter in the closet when you're not around? That thing is, you know. It is the symbol of witches. If anything's a symbol of a witch, it's the broom. And how about you women? Do you have any of you have a, I hope none of you have a black kettle. Or a large ladle. Or medium black shoes. Medium-heeled black shoes. I hope you don't have any. That's all witches wear, medium-heeled black shoes. Everybody ought to get rid of all the medium. We all know that, don't we? So when you're praying for somebody, sure you check out the heels of the shoes, the color. Now the sun god, the Chinese have, they stare into the sun, some of them do. One cult in China, in past times at least, were sun worshippers, and they stared into the sun until some of them were almost blind. And the sun has, from ages past, been a cult symbol and involved in much demonry. But God has used the sun. He talks about his saints and himself being the son of righteousness that rises with healing in his wings, and another translation, healing in her wings. Now, the deep, dark woods, you know what happens in the woods. There's a lot of witchcraft and hanky-panky in the woods with the elves and the dwarves and all the other little creatures and the other little creatures. In the woods is a bad place. Now, does anybody go out in the woods? You know, the woods are full of frogs and owls and snakes. And bad place out there for deer hunting around the demon things. How about the marsh with the fog, you duck hunters? The marshes. In the old Irish, particularly the Irish, the old occult stories, they were loaded with the marsh and the fog and the marsh, you know. And we have to be careful with fog now there in marshes. Fir trees have long been a symbol of demons in demonic areas. And we need to be, and the scriptures talk about it too. And we need to be careful about the fir trees in the mountains, don't we? Especially in this area, to keep away from those. And the rams have been an occult symbol for a couple of millenniums, several millenniums. The ram has. Now, we also come down to other things like the violin, how the devil's used the violin, and the flute. The flute, you know, all the satyrs, the half man, half horse, they always play these flutes, leading, you know, with Pan and the rest of them, you know, to the festivals, you know. I see that Vivian this morning is not here, and we'll have to pray for her because she has a flute. And Chuck Moran has the violin, you know. And I hope none of you farmers have a cow. They're sacred in England. I mean, in England, India. Sacred, you know, they have been, the devil has, you know, made those sacred as gods. I hope none of you have those cows around or drink the milk from those things, you know. And no wonder some of them are having lactase problems, you know. And then, of course, I hope nobody talks about going to church on the day of the sun, on the sun's day, or talk about Saturn's day on Saturday, or the moon's day on Monday, which is Monday, and Frigate's day on Friday and so forth, Thor's day, the god Thor with his big hammer in the heavens on Thursday, say, and every day of the week. And I hope you also don't talk about the January, February, so forth, and January from the god Janus, the opener of gates, and so forth. And anybody who knows anything about occult knows that circles have always been occult symbols. And so is the triangle. So I hope we never use those. We just kick squares and rectangles, folks. And the number 3 has always been a demonic symbol, and so has S and the letter T. And going clear back to Tammuz. And we need to steer clear of all these things, right? How can you live? Well, I see on the 10th day, the 3rd, 10th month and the 3rd day. You know. And you're flying an airplane. I said, make a 360. You say, oh, that's a circle, brother. I'll make a square. You know? You know, see, demons don't own everything. They can't rush into everything. There's been a lot of people, you know, I appreciate the willingness to get rid of everything that the devil owns. You know, our society is so loaded with woods, everything. I mean, you go, there is not a thing you can touch, hardly, that has not been touched by demons. There is hardly a thing. You can hardly find any kind of pattern. If you go back and start studying it, it can be in ties, it can be in clothes, little things you have no idea. They're there because they used them in Europe, and they're there because they went back. It's loaded with them. God's people walked all among the demonic symbols. Jesus walked among them all the time. He went up to Caesarea Philippi, where that was the area of the god Pan. That was the center of Pan worship. And Jesus went up there with his disciples and walked all around the area. Now, here are some things common to God's kingdom and Satan's both. First of all, Paul said, I glory in the cross. And the cross was invented by the Phoenicians. And the symbol was used back by Tammuz back in early ancient Babylon. Horns to blow, from ram's horns and so forth. The priests stand, you know, and blow the horns. The demon, almost all the ancient temples and worships blew the ram's horns, just like they did in Israel. The sun, the moon, the stars, the new moon. The new moon was celebrated in Israel as it was the first day of each month was the new moon, and they had a feast of new moons. That's what the Bible tells you in Galatians, you know, not to let anybody entice you into, don't let anybody judge you in respect to, you know, the new moons, feast days, new moons, Sabbath, and so forth. And the feasts were all calculated by the moons. And the full moon, the Passover was, for example, all the three major feasts, as well as the lesser ones. Rams, goats, bulls, lions, eagles, sacrifices, blood, prophecies, other tongues. They spoke in other tongues too. The demons have spoken in other tongues. Not only in our day, but back in ancient days. Healing. They did their healings. They had miracles. They believed in the spirit world. They believed in transportation by the spirit, like Elijah and Philip experienced. And in the spirit world, like we do. Those who are involved in the spirit world, what they call go out the window. And they stand like they put themselves and hang themselves by a rope, they put their feet on some books. And then they kick the books out from under them. They hang, you know, in a dark place in the room until they call, go out the window. And they begin to have a trance. And they go into a trance state and they begin to. One man I read, he walked into his house and saw his wife hanging in the middle of the room like this. And she looked dead. And he rushed over and cut her down, and she just flew at him in anger. She says, I spent 2 hours just ready to go out the window, and you came in. And all this, and she was just furious. Because out the window, they see things that are going to happen out there, and they see familiar places they have been, and things like this. Well, we also have a transportation of spirit, and that worries some Baptists and some other people like that, see, because it might be like a cult. They have revelations of the future and revelations of other things. You know, you have to even out the fails out there, telling you about your life, you know, so forth. And God tells his people about their life and discernment, the word of knowledge, and they have their word of knowledge. They get their tea leaves and they, in the cup, how they lay in the cup, and the sticks they throw down and after, and how they lay in the ground, and they interpret them, and the lifeline here, and the craniology, and checking the cranium, and the bumps in the cranium, and I mean, it's amazing what they can tell by all parts of you, and all kind of rocks, how they're placed, and all, they have all this type of things, and faith. They have things in the magic world of miracles, that which is beyond the normal, and the faith. By believing in certain things will happen. And we have that in the spiritual world. We believe. It's the whole center of our religion. Curses. There are curses in the spiritual world on both sides. Oaths. Binding and loosings. Casting lots. Temples. Altars. Incense. Priests. Anointings. Feasts. Lamps. Dancing. Religious dancing. Now you see, what happens if you want to give up everything that the devil has touched? You give up everything God says too. The devil does not own everything he touches. Something started by Satan and turned to non-satanic purpose is not necessarily demonized. It is not true that you will necessarily get demons because Satan started, and you read in the book how that 2,000 years ago, demons started something. Therefore, you have nothing to do with it. You cannot necessarily assume that. Because if it doesn't mean that, if your heart isn't in it, you're not doing anything worshiping it, you're doing something completely different, it's not understood by anybody to be that way today, then the devil can't have any fun with it, do anything with it, because it doesn't associate with him, and it does not mean you're in trouble. Let me give you an example. Just the word Sunday, you use all the time. Does that mean that when you say the day of the sun god, as soon as you say, I'll see you on Sunday, now, Sunday was not started by God. That is the terms. The Lord called it the first day of the week. Sunday means the sun's day. It was purely demonic. Now, I know some of you want to give up all those terms now, on the week and the month, but be consistent. If you do give up everything else I've mentioned to you, so you can't just pick and choose. Identification is the issue, not who started it. Something started by God, which is just something that will take the opposite now. Something started by God and used by Satan is not necessarily demonic. For example, God started sacrifices. Satan copied them. Almost everything God started in the Old Covenant, Satan got a hold of also. You see the very same parallels in Egypt and Babylon and so forth. They learned from the Israel, just like Israel at times copied from them. And God never did stop what he was doing just because Satan copied it. The priests didn't. The prophets didn't. They never threw it away. Just because it was all over the empire in demonic form, they never threw away their use of it in their religion. Now, let me give you a question here. God started sacrifices. Satan copied it. All satanic sacrifices, therefore godly. God started it. If the origin makes it that way, then satanic sacrifices should be godly, because if you trace it back and do a research on it, you find that God started it. See? So that makes them all godly, right? No. Then why do some of you insist that the devil have used something and involved it into something with an entirely different meaning and purpose is demonized? How can you say then the start makes it demonized, if on the other way the start doesn't make it demonized? See? Now, if the devil used something that God started, see, does that make it demonized? And we said, no, it can't. It's not necessarily. Now, here's another question. What if Walt Disney Corporation makes 20,000 frames of a cartoon film? This cartoon film has 20,000 frames in it, individual pictures. And the pictures are families of owls and frogs. And there's 200,000 animals in all, inside of all these 20,000 frames. And he reproduces 1,000 films. That's 200 million animals. How many demons come in? It's kind of similar to how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. How many demons come in? 200 million? You see, they don't rush into everything a person's painting. They don't rush into every time somebody makes the picture, they'll. They got more to do than that. They would rather be in people if they can. And they don't want to just stay in all the pictures everywhere. They can do so much to your mind. Now, what is a demonic color? What color is that? Somebody just tell me. What color is demonic? Brother, you're in a demonic church. You better keep your eyes closed, man. A little southern preaching here at you. You see, who made the light spectrum? Yeah, the devil didn't make the light spectrum. Now, the devil does like excesses. He likes what's unlovely. That's why he chooses dust and bones and, you know, he likes the thing to do with death and unlovely blah. He likes blah. Therefore, faded, blah, earth tones, muddy colors, he likes those better than he likes red and blues. The pure colors from the light spectrum, the rainbow colors and these things, and pastel. He likes those better because he doesn't like anything beautiful. And so he turns to the muddy things. And then he'll get people interested in that. And people will, it's amazing, people develop an appetite and a feeling for almost anything the devil will produce. They go out here and I'm amazed how they'll, you know, they'll produce things that nobody should want. Right now, pardon the subject, but my information is that they're selling men's shorts like hotcakes to women. They can't hardly keep them in stock. They're buying them so fast. And the liberals are saying, well, we got his tie, we got his shirt and his coat and his shoes, and now we're taking his shorts. Well, all they're doing is, what they're really doing is saying, boy, our sex isn't so great after all. We're trying to copy somebody else, get something better. But you see, the demons are in this. A woman should not want masculine things. And if you got masculine things, you women, you like masculine things, you need to do a little bit of business here against that. And men should not want feminine things. But he builds and works on people till they develop an affinity towards it. There are women, I can't even think of a dress. What's happened to them? And so it is true. Now, this does not mean that faded color, when your clothes faded, the demons come in. But these can become identified with certain groups that wear them, like hippies, for example. They begin to wear all the faded stuff. They begin to revolt against the well-to-do, the plastic societies, you call them. In other words, they saw dad and mom cheating on their income tax and hypocrites because they go to the Methodist church and so forth. So they wanted to get back to the earth, you know, and all of this. They went back to that way of life, taking drugs as well. And then what happened is they didn't have the money for these things. They began to delight in the poorness and the faded and the nothing. Let the hair grow. Anything to revolt against. Because you're not supposed to have that. Men are not supposed to have long hair. Well, I'm going to have long hair, and the thing they're going to do about it. See? This is how these things started. Started with the Beatles first, that long hair. Just a rebellion. And they even stated it's rebellion. I have read many times in liberal, I'm talking about the Beatles, various things, how they have admitted themselves, this is all form of rebellion. They said, this is all rebellion against the world, see. And so, these things, if it associates with something, then you do have to watch out just for the association principle. It doesn't necessarily mean that demons are there. It doesn't mean that there's any color that's demonic. Those colors are not demonic. Demons might want, like, use certain colors in certain things, use certain numbers, so it doesn't mean it's demonic because they use it. See. You can't say a flute and a violin, for example, are demonic, or a piano is, or an organ is, because the devil's people use it. Now, what is the truth and the balance on demonic homing devices? Let me try to give it to you. Demons, of course, seek to be animated in bodies wherever they can. Human bodies, preferably. They will in animal bodies if they can't get human bodies. They will even in symbols so they can, in an idol, where people come and will bow to the idol. For example, when Lester Sumrall was over in China, and he was talking about, you know, you people, they really believe that these old stone Buddhas, that it's really a god. I mean, you know, they carved it themselves out of stone. I mean, how can they fall down to something like that? They said, well, you Westerners don't understand. So you see that hole in the back? That's where the spirit comes in. We know that stone is not a god. We know we made him himself. You Westerners get the wrong idea. A spirit comes in. And we are really worshiping the spirit of Buddha, not the stone. That's only his symbol. And you see, the spirits will come if there are people, if they can have an affinity and work with people, because if they can get people to have an affinity to that which represents them, then they have an access to their hearts. And that's what they're trying to get, is an access to the heart. Or to the mind. Or if not that, at least to the bodies. And so, there have been cases where demonic spirits have come into certain symbols, sitting there on the shelf in a bedroom or something, particularly if there has been a love, an affinity, a strong love for a thing which represents the demons, and particularly if you have a certain problem that is akin to that particular spirit, and he can draw your eyes to that and begin using that as he's working on you to bring you into a certain frame of reference in relating to him. He likes to do that if he can. In certain cases, we have found some surprises. We have found people really, seemed to be bound by something and we couldn't get rid of, and then when that thing was gone, that thing left because it was a symbol of that. But many others having the same item have had no trouble with it. It doesn't mean he's in every one. And it isn't that they love to come into pictures or into stone items of glass. They want to deal with people. Now, if you've got one of these in your home, and it means nothing to you what it represents, nothing, and you're in a good shape with the Lord and don't have a particular spirit that is akin to that spirit, in other words, if you get a picture of the ancient world out of National Geographic magazines, and here's Egypt and Syria and Babylon and all the rest out there, and this picture of Ahab, and you don't have an Ahab spirit, you probably won't notice a thing. You probably won't have any problem. But if you happen to have a spirit akin to what Ahab had, and there's a picture of Ahab, and you can be drawn to that, and there's something that he's making an affinity, and that's his symbol, and he's working in you, you may have some problems when you put his image up here. There may be something working on you. All the answers in all these things that we said, and there's some we don't know everything. We have found some real surprises about some of these things. But it's not a foregone conclusion that demons rush into everything. They're not rushing into, the owls are being turned out on multiple mass production. They're not rushing into them, boom, 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 fast as they come off the production line. That isn't what they want to do. Owls are not demonic in the first place. God made them. There's nothing wrong with an owl. He's only doing what he's told to do inside. He's doing no more than all the rest of the animals that are carnivorous. See? He's not mad at anybody. He won't attack if you walk through his woods. He's not mad at you. He only goes after his food when he's hungry, just like you do. And, you eat chickens, and they chop their head off and all this, They kill them and eat them. And that's all he's doing, is killing and eating. He just doesn't have an axe. His cutting blade is right up here. Now, there's one family in this church, the Newbies. They have been... that poor girl has really been under the attack of the devil. And I admit, when you're under an attack that is killing you, I mean a ferocious attack, and it's killing you bodily, and the doctors can't find anything wrong with you, and day and night you are being decimated, it does behoove you to look in to everything you got on your shelf, so to speak, and it does behoove you to throw away everything that's a suspect or semi-suspect, and it's worth going the extra 3 miles just in case. Doesn't do any good to die saying, I doubt that it would do it. I don't know that it does. It's not worth the price. Now, but they've been stripped of most everything they own. And some of these things is because they just didn't want to balk anything. And some of it was because people had this idea. They said, oh, that's demonic. I've got research and that's demonic. You can't have a heart here. You can't have this here. You can't have this. You can't have this. You can't have this. And boom, 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 nothing left. We need to be careful. And I'm wondering if the demons really didn't enjoy that.
Right.
Now, there are some things that really were suspect. I mean, for example, the house. They found out that the house they lived in, that ground, has been Indian burial ground. If anything suspect, that's it. An Indian burial ground is a very definite suspect, if anything is. But we do have to be careful of false gods to have them around. Christians should not have false gods. We should not have teraphims around our house. The feeling you get in the hill about in the days of Abraham and in the days of Saul, when Michael's daughter brought a teraphim and put it in the bed and said that was David, you say, what's that doing in the house? Well, what are they doing in our houses? We do have to be careful not having occult symbols in our homes. We do have to stay clear of obvious demonic symbols. And some of you are new and don't know what we're talking about. We've got tapes on this. You should go back and listen to them. We do have to watch for possible reactions we may have to things like this. And we probably have thrown out a lot of innocent, non-demonic items. But it is better to throw out too much than too little. I'm sure I've thrown out some things that probably were no problem at all. I knew when I threw them out. But just in case. Plus, I didn't want them to be a stumbling block to anybody. Now, here's another thing. If the thing has no demonic force, you throw out. Often it's better for a Christian to be without the item anyway, for appearance sake. Just because, as a Christian, and what that is associated with, it's better not to have all these things in your house that associate with it. Whether the demons are there or not, if you have any problems at all, you don't want to have your home full of all kinds of things of ancient gods and other things, you know. Does anybody equate with that? I think that's really true. It's better to clean your house up of things that portray things that are ungodly. Now, so please be careful about this matter. I mean, for your own conscience, do what you have to do. But be careful about stripping each other from what they own. Now, it is true that maybe, you know, sometimes you have to, some things are obvious. But, you know, that's a demonic color. We cannot say that, friend. Just because you read in a book where demons, you know, it were involved with black, for example. Well, Greg has a black suit? Yeah. No, not quite black. Oh, you're all right, Greg. But a good brother down here has a black suit on. I wear a black suit. I see, you know, devil's color. It's not the devil's color. And we have to be careful that we don't allow. We have found out in a book that somewhere the devil used that, and therefore God has robbed them. God is bigger than the devil, and he's not robbed of it just because the devil might use something. Otherwise, the devil could take him away, everything away from God. He couldn't even open your eyeballs. How about tapes? The devil used books, records, all kinds of things, microphones. Now, second item. Some people have gone overboard and have rebuked demons to get rid of sicknesses and have forgotten to pray to the Lord. I never, ever, ever rebuke a demon for a physical problem without also asking the Lord to heal it, heal that person. There is much more scripture for praying for healing to get rid of sickness and rebuking a demon. You know what happens when you pray for the Lord to heal something that's demonic? The Lord evicts that demon. That's how he heals. He says, demon, get out. He rebukes the demon. You rebuke it in Jesus' name, or he rebukes it in his own name. He says, I rebuke you, demon, get out. The demon says, I'm going. So it isn't like you can't, we get all kinds of miracle healing before we rebuke demons. Now, it is true that we prayed for people for certain things and didn't get healing, and they rebuked the spirit and nothing left. That's true. But we also have rebuked things that didn't leave, and then we prayed for it and it left. And you can't just jump to the conclusion. Some of you, particularly some of you ladies, are running way too simplistic in your minds, and you're making too many assumptions. If this is this, then that means that. That doesn't necessarily mean it. You have to stop. And, you know, for example, say, well, a certain type of problem causes ratio. Therefore, about 40% of people have that problem. Wait a minute. Now, you skin doctors, there are a lot of things that can cause rash. See, you cannot jump to simplistic conclusions. We need to be more careful and to think, and say, now, is that the only thing? Are there other things? Could it be? There's too many people making connections. Too many people making connections because they're not thinking carefully. Doctors, you know, if you go to a drug that you say, do you know why the doctors don't tell you, generally, and the drug doesn't tell you what kind of a reaction, side effect you might get from a drug? And you get a side effect and say, boy, they should have told me that. You know why? They have a manual about that thick. And every drug has a long list. And if you look at those things, there's thousands of them. And if you look at them, about 70% of them are the same for every drug. dizziness, vomiting. I mean, depending on your makeup. And therefore, they'd be scaring everybody to death. We have so many psychosomatic illnesses, warning everybody about everything. As soon as they felt something, they would be sure that was it. And causes by all kinds of other things. But non-professionals in a particular area, that's not theirs, they travel so simplistically, they jump to conclusions so quick. And we need to be careful, as saints of God, you know, that we are several classes and cuts above babbling idiots and non-thinkers. We need to think and be wise and intelligent people and not get the idea that we're just fools bumbling around, making all kinds of idiotic statements to people. We need to be careful in our thinking. Don't you think so? I'm asking you to think and not just jump to conclusions quickly just to make connections. Next item. We need to be responsible for what we feel, for what we say, I meant to say, as a result of what we feel, rather than decide that all is of God. Everything's revelation. Now, I've said it before, I want to bring it back. Everything that you get that makes you excited, that is about God, at a time when you're praying and feeding God's Spirit, is not a revelation from God. Naturally, you'll be excited about things that you love and things you care about. And since you love Jesus and things concerning people's lives and the spiritual world and ministry, of course you're going to get excited about it. You're going to feel strongly about it. The world feels strongly about their things too. And it does not mean it's from God. We need to be careful to take responsibility and not just say, God said it or it's from God. We need to be more careful about this. I'm asking everybody to be careful. There's been mistakes made. There's been people deciding things. Some people, you know, I'm not going to implicate the congregation. I don't know who or how many. And therefore, this is a shotgun approach. And just to catch those who, if it applies, will then make it apply for you. You see, a long time, when we first started this church, I tried to be careful. I saw so much out here in the cosmetic world, so much sloppiness, so much carelessness, so much wild assumptions. So many people running around thinking this was God's leading. It was an abomination to me. It was fanaticism. It's out there everywhere. So I warned the congregation. I taught them very carefully in all these areas, explained everything to them so that we wouldn't do the same. But the people, not having a real understanding and full balance and having it on the other side, it grew back a little bit paranoid then. And I didn't want them to keep back from the real. I just wanted to warn them about what was false. So they backed up even from the real. But now that God is moving in particular ways and we've got people in prayer meetings and praying for another and God is speaking to people's hearts, I've opened the door. I retaught again, but I've opened the door and I've said to be careful. But what's happened is a lot of people decided, oh, the old rule is off. Because now we can do it, so the old rule is off. And without me ever saying it's off. And exactly in the same place that those I warned them about. We have a lot of people, I don't mean percentage-wise, that are in exactly the same place as the charismatic world out there in fanaticism, saying things of God that are not, leading that are not, wild imagination, jumping quickly. They're violating everything I taught them, and I've taught you, because of this move, they decided that no longer applies. That's old order. That's old. It does apply. I made no mistakes at that time. I opened it knowing we'd have some of these problems. I told you we would have some. There's no way not to have some. And in general, you've done a super good job. I don't know any growing church this size who could have handled what we have given you better than this church. But that's not good enough. I mean, we want to get rid of all that which is not fanaticism. We want to teach. It's my job to continue to warn you and try to bring us into the middle. I'm not paranoid or over worried because we make some mistakes, but I'm not going to let it build and build. We've got to teach and try to keep it into the middle. We've got to be careful. And so I'm asking you to be careful. I'm asking you to let me know. Every so often I find out that somebody's got tons of information about problems that somebody has, enormous stories, and never tell us until finally the dam bursts. And they come and say, I knew that dam was going to burst. I have all the data, how the concrete was weakening, the water was bad. I have all this information. So why didn't you bring it to us before the dam burst? I thought maybe you'd like to know it now that the dam has burst. Catch us early. When you know things, give us the information so we can work on it and reinforce it. I'm also convinced the Spirit's pushing God's people trying to push him off the bluff. Fly the Spirit. Be careful. Judge things. Some of you need to go back and get to all these different series I preached on these things and go back and listen to them all over again, particularly you that have worked, are working in these areas. And I don't want you to get paranoid. Back up from the true gifts. We don't want that. But we do want, because the devil will try to get you all fulfilled. Or else he'll let you go overboard. And we cannot give in to the devil. So then I'll pull back and do nothing then, Pastor. That's not what we want. That's what the devil tells you. Well, pull back and do nothing. They don't think what you have is of God. What I gave you, they don't think that's of God. You better pull back because now they think, you know, you're probably some kind of a, you know, idiot or something. So you better pull back. See, that is not what God wants. That's the devil talking to you. Now, next item. I know it's getting late. Well, I'm just going to make this one statement. I haven't done a research on this, but knowing what I know and how things are, I would say if you see somebody with a heart necklace or a heart bracelet or something, say, well, that's demonic. It doesn't mean it's demonic because the devil used it or even the devil started it. Like I told you, if it doesn't mean that today, if it does, if there's no connotation to that, if that is not what you mean, is not involved in it, because the devil may have used that sign once, does not mean that it's now demonic and go get you trouble. There's too many things that will fall in that same field. I've already mentioned them. And even you who think it is would avoid it, say, the Sunday and Monday and Thursday and January and things like this, see? You still do these things and think nothing about it. So please be careful about jumping to these conclusions. Now, the devil is another item. Judging and gossiping was pretty much stamped out of this church about 4 years ago. God took the devil took advantage over some people here in this church, and we really worked that. And we've had a beautiful church network that we just haven't had the usual gossip that floats around and all over the whole world, society, and in most churches. We just haven't had much of the judging and gossiping. And then when deliverance came, it helped even more because people said, well, I ain't going to judge them. It's the demon that's causing the problem, and I'll make a difference and realize that it's not really them. You know, when Peter said, oh, it shall not be unto you, Lord, Satan didn't say, Peter, get behind me. He said, Satan. He made the difference. He knew who was doing the talking. And so it was. So deliverance has been good. But there's a little area that has opened the door. And that is because the person is trying to know what demon is it and so forth. It has brought some people into judgment again unwittingly. They've looked and said, oh, you know, they started to judge, you know, well, you have a demon. You get this demon, you get this. And they begin again, the demon found a way to subtly and cleverly cause you to begin to judge in what was supposed to be a, quote, legal way. See, you got a demon, you got the demon, you got the demon of this. See, in other words, that becomes a legitimate expression of him. We need to be very careful about judging what another person has or judging his motive because, you know, we say, well, I'm not judging his motive, I'm judging the demon. But some people judge the motive with that excuse. And they are judging him by saying this. You've got to be careful. These spirits are very clever. Which brings me to my last point. And that is that I am thoroughly convinced that demons play dumb oftentimes when manifesting themselves in order we might underrate them. You know how stupid they've played out of them? They have said the dumbest things. They have said the dumbest things. You think, how can they be so stupid? How can they be so dumb? Now, it is true that they don't have light. They're not having revelation from God. They're under darkness. But I am convinced that they have played a game in this. And they have appeared to be very stupid. They don't care what you think about them. They disdain human beings, mortals. They think it's weakness. And they don't worry about what you think about them. They just have fun and laugh at you as you go around and say how stupid they are. Because they can see how we're getting them, throwing them off guard, making you feel like they're nothing. And if you can just manipulate them around, building your pride, doing different things. Because one of the reasons I feel this way is because have you noticed how clever they have been to trick us in so many areas and hide things and get us to do things and know things? They've been more clever than what they sound like. Therefore, I think, and on some other grounds too, that they have played this game purposely to try to suck you into thinking that they're not worthy, hardly, of your attention, And they're a powerful foe. And we need to be careful. Now, it's true that before the Lord Jesus Christ, the power means nothing. Even a tremendously powerful foe means nothing against a much bigger, more powerful foe, see. You need a dog that can just, you need a cat that can really, you know, give a mouse a lot of trouble. But this big dog can get the cat a lot of trouble. But a bigger cat, like a lion, can get the dog a lot of trouble, see. And so that's the way it is with demons. Now, I'm through with that infamous topic. I need to make some announcement this morning, so please just hold your seat a moment, if you will. Let me find it here. The first one is free to sing, clap, praise, and dance before the Lord as you feel to in your spirit. During the service, the front of the sanctuary is not open for personal edification reasons. At this time, we want only the most mature, anointed, gifted members who can edify and bless the congregation the most in testifying, singing, exhorting, teaching, preaching, and dancing before the Lord. Accordingly, please strictly observe the following policies. 1. Admonitions may only be given by the pillars in the church. If you don't know whether you're not a pillar, you're not. I don't want women and babes or even the General Assembly admonishing and correcting. That is the job of elders, ministers, and leaders. 2. Testimony should only be given by those who are anointed, have something significant to say, and who have capability to speak well. Because we have only time for a few testimonies, I want only the best, most mature, anointed, and edifying ones, so that the service is as great a blessing to all possible. Those less capable, although feeling great anointing because of the service, and great emotion, need to be careful not to be presumptuous. I have higher standards for our services than most of you. I don't want the less intelligent, the poor speakers, and the less logical ones ministering to our scholars, graduates, lawyers, astute, professional businessmen, college teachers, elders, ministerial leaders, and more mature and spiritual members of a congregation. And that makes sense. We don't have this in school. You have your kids, you know, teaching the teachers. And so your young ones don't come to teach the older ones. It is not enough that wonderful things have happened to you or that you feel anointed. Our best should minister, not our worst or the mediocre. Length of time at the chapel or being able to get to college is not enough. More important is the God-given ability to be able to intelligently hold the rapt attention of the congregation and edify their minds as well as their spirits. Those unable to do this should testify in college chapels, in fellowships, and on a one-to-one basis. If our church was small, it would be different. 3. Only those most gifted and able to minister unto the congregation as well as unto the Lord in dance should be in front of the congregation during the service, dancing before the Lord. Those less capable should confine their expressions of love and dancing before and after the service. So you can do it at that time for hours. You can do it for hours. You can all build up in the assembly, do it afterwards for hours. Or in the pew space. Everyone who feels like singing to Jesus doesn't come up in front and sing. And the same goes for dancing. Because during the service, this is for ministering, not just for personal edification. And some of you have used it for personal edification. Don't be fooled by the fact that you can shift your feet a bit and feel wonderful within. What you do may be good for you, but has God given you that ability to be limber and able to move all the body in a smooth, coordinated, beautiful, graceful dance? If not, please don't take the place of ministering in that capacity. The gifted and anointed have been blocked by the many who are hungry to express their love to Jesus, for there isn't room for them at the front for anyone with real ability. Only those who can only move that much, there's no more room. They're smashing into everybody. So you block the more gifted by the less gifted. If the Spirit of the Lord lifts as songs change, you're downhill, please return to your seat. You can come back out again as often as you feel anointed and led. Don't drop back to a semi-dance and stay here just because you're out here. I've seen people do that. They're doing wonderful, and then they stop and just do something halfway or just stand. Go back to your seat. Come back again when the Spirit of the Lord is moving you. Children below the ages of high school who are really dedicated to Jesus and are sincerely loving Jesus, locked into Him, may dance during service in the aisles next to the front, but not in this space. Parents, please wisely judge for your children. Parents, don't let your children be a law unto themselves at age 5 and age 3. I mean, you know, this just a few years out of the womb. Help them a little bit. Make judgments for them. Don't let them just do any old thing. You know, keep your children under control. This detailed qualification is given because some of you have not obeyed your pastor in the previous admonitions. There has been a lack of sensitivity to what is being said and wanted. Do not let your emotions and desires cause you to be selfish, insensitive, or unsubmissive. Think. This is for the spiritual edification of our church. We must not elbow our way into selected ministries and therefore block others more capable because we want to be in the inner circle. Think not. Remember that vision my wife had with the door opening and people trying to elbow their way in and then flowing through? Think not more highly of yourself than you ought, and fulfill one another, Jesus said. If someone else doesn't comply, it doesn't mean that the policy is off. And that's okay for you, too. Say, well, then I can do it, too. Now, you can't disobey the law because they're not obeying the law. That is not true. Please do not let critical demons lie to your mind and tell you that this church is only for the elite, then. It isn't. It's for all. But the success of our church services is partly because we insist on high standards, accuracy, edification, and anointing. See, everybody doesn't get a chance to preach, so that's only for the elite, see? See, you don't want to come to hear everybody preach. You know, you don't really want that. You don't want to come to hear just anybody sing. I mean, you want that which edifies you the most. We do not want to reduce our services so that the presumptuous and unqualified lead the more careful, conservative, and qualified. And, of course, that goes for those in the middle, too. We want the best that are able to do the most for us. Because there's a lot of churches full of the mediocre. We want something that really lifts and really does the most and also can appeal to those who are the most spiritual, the most in tune, the most intelligent, as well as to others. You know, I freely welcome everybody. I mean, it makes no difference to me. I welcome everybody. I want to open all doors to the crippled, the retarded, the weak, but I don't want them to be the ministers. And it doesn't mean you're rejected. It just means you're not in the God-given place of ministry. I want kidneys and livers and all the rest, spleens, in my body. I just don't want them to be my mouth. Those who cannot discern their place should ask the pastor, and they should determine not to allow spirits of hurt to arise within them if the pastor doesn't think they are among the most capable. After all, no one is the best judge of their own ministry. If you do not heed this policy, I will be forced to seat you during the service. I do not want the gifted to hold back because of this admonition and fear. I want more of your ministry. Please don't judge each other. Let me do that. In our master service for the excellence of the ministry of Jesus, Pastor Donnelly Barnett. This is a necessary vote about those who may be looking at Bible college next fall in the evening classes. Oh, my. Oh, yeah, I've got to go ahead. And I'm going to ask you, and you should, you know, if you have a capability of going to Bible college and you need it in the evening, even a class or two, consider that. Now, how many, don't vote until I tell you to, how many of you would rather take, I'm talking about only those who are thinking about taking evening classes, and are thinking about taking it at this time, one of these two classes, how many would rather take ministerial orientation A rather than Isaiah on Wednesday evening in the fall in Bible college? Now, understand, ministerial orientation A, you have to be in your fourth year in Bible college. You've had to have at least 3 years of Bible college before you can take it. And you may be graduated. The reason I'm offering this is I'm trying to appeal to the many graduates we've had before the class was offered and to those who've never taken it, but you've graduated. Because someday if you're going to go out into the ministry, you really need this class. And it's a 3-hour class, and it covers a lot of areas. Now, here's what the course is going to look like. Just real quickly. Monday night, Genesis, Exodus, and Numbers is 3 hours, 7, 8, 9 o'clock. Fundamentals of Christian Education for 2 hours. And the Principles of Etiquette, new class, 1 hour. Now that's Monday night. Tuesday night, Church History, 2 hours. Ministry of Orientation B, which we'll talk more about in a minute, 1 hour. And Christian Education for preschoolers, 2 hours. Wednesday night, Apocalypse Daniel, 3 hours. And either Ministry of Orientation or Isaiah, that we're going to vote on in a minute, on Wednesday. Thursday, Unfolding Revelation of God, Apologetics, 3 hours. I'll talk about more about that in a minute. Authenticity of the Bible, 1 hour. Christian Education for the Elementary Child, 2 hours. And General Epistles, 2 hours. Now, I know that's a little bit fast, but trying to get an idea of what you might take and how many hours you might use, take and what hours you might, you know, decide to come. If you fall in the category of one that probably will take a class on Wednesday night, but not Apocalypse Daniel, and you have your choice of either Ministry of Orientation A or Isaiah, I want to know which one to offer. I don't want to offer it and have nobody want to take it. Now, how many of you, I want you to think that probably you will take a class on Wednesday night besides Apocalypse Daniel? That means you can't take Apocalypse Daniel now. That's a 3-hour class. And you'll either take Ministry of A or Isaiah, and you would rather have Ministry of Orientation A, and you would come and take that class if it were offered. Would you put your hands really high? Really high. In fact, would you stand up? That would help me. Okay. 10. Okay, thank you. Write those numbers down, somebody. There's one over there, 11. Okay. Oh, while we're at it here, real quickly. Now, Ministry Orientation B is a 1-hour class, and A just gives you, you know, more the basics, the whole spectrum. B comes in with some selective things. It already supposes you already have good understanding of water baptism and all these things. Now as a minister, it's putting in all kinds of situations. What if this happens? What about this? Can you do this? What about this and this? And all these different subjects. And it goes a lot deeper, some kind of sticky and tricky areas, difficult areas. And it explains those things to you. And you don't have to have A to take B. You can take both at the same time. A naturally should be taken first, you know, and in regular sequence, then B, although it wouldn't be absolutely necessary, but it's the foundation in which to put B and C on. How many would take B, you think, for 1 hour on Tuesday night, which also is church history that night, or Christian education for preschoolers? You take B if it were offered. Would you raise your hand? You'd like to get an idea whether to offer that or not. No. No, it's not, is it, David? No, it's not. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. 23. Somebody writing this down? Who's writing it down? Gene, okay. Now, 23, MOB. MOA was 30, 31. And Isaiah was 13, 11. Isaiah was 11. I can remember like an elephant, a real sick one. Okay. I think that's it. Thank you very much. Take about a 10-minute break. Morning worship will start right after that. This evening, we'll be giving a report. The whole team will be giving a report about the ministry in Kalispell after the worship service. We had wonderful meetings, though.